And welcome into the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Michelle Knezovic. Joe Rex Road will be along shortly here on the program here today. Michelle, good morning. How are you?
Doing well this morning. And let's preface this. No, Joe Rex Road did not sleep through his alarm.
No,
we knew
not.
That he was coming in late this morning.
Yes, we did.
So we got your back, Rex Road.
We did. Rex Road, as always, remains a true professional here on this
program. Of course, of course.
So, that's what we do. Here on the program, we got a lot to get to today. A crazy one last night with the Nashville Predators, where they had victory secured, and then all of a sudden it wasn't secure, and then it was secure again. So a wild ride for the Predators last night. We'll get into that. We'll revisit some comments that David Poile made yesterday and discuss what that could mean and unpack your thoughts on that for the Predators over the course of the next couple of weeks. We'll have Teron Davenport coming up at 8 o'clock today, so some schedule reshuffling this week. TD normally joins us on Friday. He'll join us today at 8 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans. Paul Kuharsky will join us tomorrow, and then Charles Robinson will join us Friday. So some scheduling things that have taken place this week that we've had to shuffle around, but we have shuffled the deck here on Robbie and Rex Road, and looking forward to that. So the Predators in action last night, they do get the win. They win 5-4 in the shootout, and for a moment, it looked like they were on the verge of an epic collapse. And you're up 4-2. And I thought really the whole game, Michelle, I would describe it as, okay for the Predators. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were, you got outshot pretty heavily last night, 39-26 by a team that's not very good. Now, the shots don't always tell the story, but, I thought Vancouver played a pretty good road game last night, but the Predators found themselves up 4-2 in the third period after a goal by Mikael Granlund, and you thought, all right, well, wasn't the prettiest game, but the Predators are going to skate out of here with a win. And then all of a sudden, with a minute and 7 seconds left, Vancouver scores a goal to make it 4-3, and then less than a minute later, Kuzmenko ties it up with 16 seconds remaining to tie things up at 4, and you're thinking to yourself, man, they're going to go from winning a game 4-2 with just over a minute left to losing a game in overtime. And I thought if that happened, even though I've already kind of declared it, I don't know how, if they would have blown that game last night, I don't know how David Poile or really anybody else could have looked around and said, all right, that's it. Like you can't do that if you're the Predators. Now they survived overtime, and they got back and won it in a shootout. UC Saros continues to be an absolute brick wall in the shootouts. He's been really, really good. But on the verge of disaster last night for the Predators, they find a way to get the 2 points, and it's a good thing they did because Minnesota won last night against L.A., so the Predators remain 7 points behind the Wild. But, Michelle, that was almost an absolute disaster for the Predators last night.
Yeah, Robbie, it was a close one. And honestly, watching that game, and it kind of encapsulated for me how this season has been when you look at, okay, they're up really, really high and then they're low and then they, are competitive with the team you don't think they can be, and then they lose some easy cupcake games for them. And that, I feel like, was my emotions as I'm watching this game and trying to put my fan hat on for a second, because it's what we've seen from this team all year. You'll see, okay, good strides of some positive things, and then it's in front of your eyes unravels, and you're like, what is happening right now, when they just, the Canucks are back in action with, a minute to go and are able to tie it. The Preds can, secure it in overtime, but they're lucky that they have UC Saros there. And UC Saros is, a main reason we're still talking about the Predators in this playoffs race. If UC Saros wasn't on the team, they easily would not be a playoff team. So I'm on the same boat as you, Robbie. I think after the Bruins game, I pretty much had made up my mind as to where I think that this team should go, and that they've just been trying to hold this window open for a little bit too long. But, we had David Poile on yesterday, and he yep. seemed somewhat optimistic. If you're a general manager of a team, I'm sure you always have that little window open of, okay, well, maybe they could go on a run, or maybe, they could flip the switch. But at this point, the Canucks are not a good team. We discussed these next couple of games for them leading up to the trade deadline. They are playing non-playoff teams, And to make it that close last night, especially with UC Saros in net, I know you don't have Forsberg. I know Ryan Johansson got hurt, but too close for comfort, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, part of it is – that's why I asked David Poile the question I did yesterday, and we're going to get into some of his comments a little bit later this hour. But, like, evaluating this team, like, to me, it can't just be, okay, well, where do we sit in the standings? Like, I get that. I mean, you've now closed the gap on Calgary, but the problem is Calgary's not a playoff team right now. Minnesota is still 7 points up on you, so you still got a lot of work to do to close the gap for the playoff race. But to me, it's like it's beyond the standings. Like, how does your team look? How does your team stack up against playoff caliber teams? And, you know, I know you get the win last night, which is ultimately the only thing that matters if you're David Poile in terms of you needed the 2 points and you got them, so I get that. But, like, it was a struggle last night to beat the Vancouver Canucks at home. You lost to the Arizona Coyotes at home last week. I mean, some of the eyeball tests just tells you this team's just not very good. And I thought that was the case again last night. Now, look, they had guys make big plays like Philip Tomasino. I thought it was really good to see him score last night. He made a great play to kind of knife through the defense there and a good finish for him. So maybe that unlocks him a little bit moving forward. Big play by Novak again to get the puck to the net. And Niederreiter finished it off. You know, Granlund gets a goal last night. So it's not like they were terrible last night. Like they made some plays and had some big moments in the game. But I do think you can make an argument, and Vancouver players were talking about this after the game, that Vancouver outplayed them last night. And eventually, like, I think you've got to look around if you're the Predators and say, all right, you know, how good are we really? And, you know, the playoff odds, I mean, to their credit, went up last night. They're now at 12%. So they did make some progress on that, according to MoneyPuck.com. But I watched this team play, and even last night they get the win, and you're like, yeah, just it's not very inspiring as to what it's going to be moving forward. So look, like, I largely think the problem is going to take care of itself. Like, if they play the way that they did last night, they're not winning all five of these games before the trade deadline, and they're probably dropping one of the next two to San Jose at Arizona. They're going to have to play better than they did last night, and maybe the conversation takes care of itself. But I think a big fear from Predators fans is they go on kind of a mini streak here before the trade deadline against teams that aren't very good, and that convinces David Poile and management to not do anything at the deadline. And I think that would be a mistake if that's the route they choose to go.
I agree, Robbie. And, you know, we had Max Herz on our show yesterday, and I asked him a similar question. Do you think that this team has the talent? Do you think they could be successful in the playoffs? And he brought up something interesting, and he said, you know, we're kind of at an interesting point right now where we've got about 11 teams tanking for Bedard. So part of the reason that the Nashville Predators are even in the conversation right now for the playoffs is because of that, Robbie. You have so many teams who are not actually trying to make the playoffs. I mean, I look at the Blues, but they have a young core. Could they put some things together and, you know, move ahead of the Predators as far as points, you know? And last year, the Preds had the least amount of points making it into the playoffs. You don't want to be that team. You don't want to be the bottom team who just barely makes it into the playoffs. So then you have a worse draft position compared to all of the other teams tanking to get Bedard. You don't want to be that last team in because your odds of being successful are very, very low. I know people can bring up, you know, some different scenarios, but listen, if this team makes it into the playoffs, they do not make it past the first round.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really surprising. I mean, it would require UC Saros to just be otherworldly for a 7-game series, which he could do. You also need a lot of other things to go along with it. I mean, look, I heard, you know, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace talking about this yesterday too, and, you know, one of Willie's points was, I mean, you don't have to make a decision until the deadline comes around. And in the Western Conference this year, there's not really a dominant team. And I understand where he's coming from there. I mean, I look at the standings. Like, Dallas has been really good all year long. I would not describe them as dominant. You know, Winnipeg's good. Colorado, we know what they can be, but they've not been that all year. And a lot of that's injury-related. Does that click for him at some point? I don't know. I still don't think Colorado is the same team that they were a year ago. They have a hole in their lineup that Kadri left that they've not really filled. Now, maybe they fill that at the deadline. The point being, like, there's not a dominant team in the Western Conference. So, Willie's thought was, like, if you can get in the playoffs, maybe you give yourself a chance in the playoffs because there's no overwhelming favorite. And I understand the idea behind that. The problem is, the problem with that for me is, this Predators team has shown zero ability all season long to be consistent whatsoever. And you have to have some level of that if you're going to be successful in the playoffs.
Yep, that's the number one thing you need in the playoffs. Not only, you know, to keep your team healthy, but consistency. You need to be able to close out a series, Robbie.
And then to that point last night, another injury sustained for the Predators. You know, we've talked about Philip Forsberg. And from the sound of David Poile yesterday, he made it sound like it's not likely that he's back on this upcoming road trip. Just a two-game road trip for the Predators coming up, taking on San Jose and Arizona. And then last night, Ryan Johansson leaving the game with an injury, and something that always freaks me out when I watch hockey, and quite frankly, I'm surprised it doesn't happen a little bit more. Looked like the skate blade of Quinn Hughes of the Canucks made contact with the back of Johansson's lower right leg. So, you know, there was no specific update on Johansson's status after the game, but John Hines did say it didn't look good, and it did not look good. So there's no telling what that could mean for Ryan Johansson. Hopefully it's nothing too serious, but anytime you're talking about a skate blade to the back of the leg, it's not good. So we'll see what happens on that front. We're off and running here today, taking your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the game last night, and we'll also dive into some comments that David Poile had on our show yesterday as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. Taking your thoughts on the Preds at 615-737-1025. John on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, said, "Honestly, I didn't want to see him win because it'll give him false hope, but also them winning in a shootout over Vancouver is almost a loss in and of itself." This is from John on the text line. And it was one of those things last night where I'm watching this team play, and as the game's going on, I'm thinking about some comments that David Poile made on our show yesterday. And there was a lot that David Poile said and a lot that people reacted to on social media yesterday with our interview with him on the show. And one of the things was the comments about rebuilding and resetting that Joe asked him about. Here was what David Poile had to say yesterday on our show about what a rebuild could look like and whether or not he's thought about that here with the Predators.
David, what's your sense? You have a lot of veterans on this team, obviously. If you go the way of, I guess, the word rebuild, what's your sense for, you know, some of the veterans on this team, I guess their appetite for that? You know, obviously with some of your core being older, you mentioned, you know, maybe someone might want to be traded. I mean, have you thought about that just in terms of what a rebuild might look like and how it might affect some of the veterans?
I have, and I've talked to, you know, as the years gone along in terms of, I would say, discussing things with more veteran players, where we stand, some of, you know, similar questions that you're asking me right now. I mean, it's got to change. We have to find a way to be a little bit better. It's like we've had in many of these conversations this year. Last year, 9 players had career years. This year, we have 0 players having career years. And, you know, I guess when you look over the course of somebody's career, that happens. You know, I guess we were fortunate, if you will, last year that we had 9 players that did that. Maybe we're very unlucky this year that we have nobody that's having a good year. And I think we have, you know, some really good players that you know, could be playing better, should be playing better. And again, that weighs into the whole decision about what we do, you know, moving forward. To you use your word, you know, rebuild, I prefer the word like maybe a little bit of a reset. You know, maybe there's a middle ground into, you know, all this that we might do or not do. But, you know, we have to play this out. We got to see how we do tonight. And then we're sort of living, you know, day to day as we play the games and as we talk to people and we make decisions.
So there are a couple of interesting things there I thought from David Poile in that answer yesterday. One of which being obviously the rebuild, reset comments, and you know, rebuild. He talked about rebuild being the word that we use. Maybe reset is more of the term that he would appreciate, more the term that he would go with there. And maybe some middle ground that could be found if that's the route the Predators decided to go there. I thought that comment was telling as to kind of the thought process that David Poile is going with here when it comes to trying to determine what the future of this team looks like. And I also found the first part of that answer pretty interesting, and I don't know that I fully connected on it when he said it originally, but I went back and listened to it yesterday, and I heard Willie talking about this yesterday too, with Caroline and D-Mace, you know, talking to players about kind of the direction that the team is going and having those conversations. And, you know, he talked about having some of the same conversations that we've had with him in terms of some of the things that we've been talking about with David Poile. I found those two comments to be really interesting. Maybe some middle ground on the reset, rebuild, and also like having some of these conversations about the direction of the team with veteran players. And I do wonder, like, veteran players on this team, what have those conversations been like, and what is their appetite to a reset, rebuild, whatever term you want to use? I thought a couple of interesting little tidbits there from David Poile. We welcome Joe Rexroad into the program.
Hey, Rex.
Hi. How you guys doing?
We're good.
Yeah, I kind of regretted not following that up, because the question that I have after that is, okay, so are you talking to people about trading them?
Right.
Or are you talking to people about making trades? Or, you know, right, selling? You know, like, hey, like if it's Roman Josi, then obviously you're not talking about moving him. You're like, hey, man, you know, and granted, you know, Roman's locked up here. Of course, Roman also, you know, could decide that he'd want to go elsewhere. Or is it like, it's probably more that, right? I would think so.
But, like, I mean, a guy like Ryan McDonagh came to mind immediately when I started thinking about that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we talked about him a lot yesterday in terms of, you know, what could his value be and what would the interest out there be. But, like, if you're him, like, you didn't sign up for this. And, you know, he's part of this, obviously, the position that they're in. I mean, they've had players that haven't played as well. But, like, if you're Ryan McDonagh, and they're throwing out the idea of a reset or whatever word they want to use, like, if I'm him, I want no part of that. Like, I'm in the back stages of my career. I've won two Stanley Cups, and I want to be somewhere where you got a chance to win a Stanley Cup. I mean, I don't think that – well, I don't think. I know that when Ryan McDonagh waived his no-movement clause to come here, he thought this team could compete. And if they're not going to compete, I don't imagine that Ryan McDonagh wants to be a part of that.
I wouldn't think so either. Now,
maybe he's – I don't think he's probably not the only one, but he's the main one that came to mind when I thought about those comments from Poile yesterday.
Yeah, like, you know, we're comparing those two, McDonagh and Ekholm, similar deals, somewhat similar situations, you know, maybe similar attractiveness to teams. But Ekholm, this is his home, and, you know, he has been wrapped into this franchise for a long time. McDonagh could be a quick hello, goodbye,
yeah,
you know. Just like Niederreiter.
Yeah, I mean, you throw him in the mix too. And you know, they win the game last night, which is good. We talked about this earlier. Like, it wasn't a very inspiring performance for me last night from the Predators. And to me, it's just beyond the standings as to where they sit right now. And, you know, D-Mace was talking about this yesterday. And, you know, obviously he wasn't a hockey player, but he was a high-level professional athlete. And he talked about, you know, in the locker room, like, players know. Like, they know how good their team is, and they know what their chances are to legitimately compete as they move forward. Like, you know, the Predators are going to say the right things, and they're not going to, you know, air dirty laundry in the media or anything like that. But, like, we're 50-something games in. This team knows what they are, right? And I do wonder if your veteran guys, like in McDonagh, like a Niederreiter, particularly those two that haven't been here that long, and maybe even some other guys on the team. You know, how does Granlund feel? How does Ekholm feel? Like, guys that have been around for a while, if David Poile looks at this team and determines whatever that middle ground is between reset and rebuild, it still, to me, it means that you're not going to be a competitive team for the next year or two. Like, how does that influence the way that the players view their time here?
Yeah, and I heard you talking earlier about the what Poyle said to us and what Willie said about it's true. I mean, the West is – the East looks loaded, and it almost looks like the East is like the AFC and the West is like the NFC.
Got it, yeah.
And so from that perspective, you could look at it like, wow, I mean, who's dominant? But here's the thing. I don't like the Preds in any matchup.
No.
So there may not be a dominant team. I'm still thinking the Avs may put it all together. But, you know, let's say not. I just take the Preds in any of those matchups. You know, if you want to compare this to 6 years ago, that team, it had some injuries and all that. And I didn't like them against Chicago. No one did, if right. they're being honest, right? Did anybody pick them?
I want to say, like, Darren did. I think Darren did.
Did he really?
I think he did.
I don't think he did.
I think he did.
Okay, well, fine.
But to your point, it was virtually no one.
But that team, and a lot – what did we say, though? Get past this one, and it could be – because that team was good enough, you know. I mean, that team – and that the West was way more competitive, yes. I would say, than two, right? This team – doesn't win any of these series, so
I agree. I mean, like we said, it would take a superhuman effort from UC Soros, which he can provide, but you also need firepower to go along with that. And I just don't know if this team has enough. I mean, we got a lot of this yesterday too. Just people texting me and some Twitter comments that we got. Liam says, "Is any of this a little selfish on Poyle's part, and that maybe he doesn't want to go full rebuild because of his age?" I don't know how much of it is he doesn't want to go full rebuild and how much of it is he knows that he can't. Like, we've talked about this. Like, they cannot do a full rebuild. They just can't do it. I don't see a way that you're going to be able to clear up Duchesne, Johansson's contract, Granlund's contract. Like, getting all those contracts off the books, I just think is going to be impossible. So you can't do a full rebuild if you still got those guys eating up money the next couple of years.
Right. I mean, he's been cup chasing, you know. So there's a cost to that now. The, you know, like the bill is, I mean, the bill's kind of been due the last couple of years. But I don't know. I don't know that you tie it to that. I have no idea what David Poyle thinks in terms of the longevity from here of his career.
No, I have no idea. 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Predators. Get to some more comments that David Poyle made on our show yesterday. Take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning. We're talking Preds, taking your thoughts on the game last night and some comments that David Poyle made on our show yesterday. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So we talked about the reset, rebuild comments that that David Poyle had yesterday and maybe kind of peeking behind the curtain as to what that could mean and what he could be thinking about this team. I also found his first answer pretty interesting yesterday, and basically I just asked him what the last week has kind of told him about this team and maybe how that could influence the direction that this thing could go in the next couple of weeks. Here's what David Poyle had to say on our show yesterday morning. How much has this past week kind of influenced what you're thinking about this team and the direction that this thing could go here in the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think it's a very important time in our season and then our future in terms of, you know, really evaluating our team, our individual players, you know, how we played, what the future looks like. The last game against Minnesota was you know, really a tough one for anybody, you know, losing the last half a minute of the game after tying the game up in such an important game. So it'd be really interesting to see how we rebound again as individuals and as a team. But you know, the trading deadline is March 3rd. I'll repeat again, I think it's just a very crucial time in the decisions that we make for not only the rest of this year, but it's certainly going to affect the future as to what we do or don't do in the next 10 or 12 days.
So, Joe, I brought this up at the end of the show yesterday. In terms of those comments and the way that I kind of took them, there's a whole lot of it in the aftermath of Poyle's interview yesterday with us of talking about the goalposts moving, or how in the world could he have not made a decision about this team yet, or all these different things. Like, they're like, a lot of Predators fans are texting me and saying he's not going to do anything at the deadline. I mean, they're just going to sit here and they're just going to sit on their hands and going to convince themselves that they have a chance to make the playoffs. And maybe they will. I don't know. I don't know how you can know 100% what the Predators are going to do as they move forward here. And look, if they end up rolling off some wins here, you know, human emotion's a real thing, and maybe that convinces them to stand pat and let this thing go. I don't know. But I also don't think that David Poile was ever going to come on our show yesterday and just announce to the world that he was selling.
Exactly.
And I took those the first part of those comments, like, David Poile, honestly, he doesn't talk about the future a whole lot when you start asking him about trade deadlines and his team and all this other stuff. When he started talking about this is an important time, not only for our season, but for the future of our franchise, like, he brought that up a couple of different times, and maybe this is just me reading in between the lines too much. Like, it kind of signaled to me where he's at right now. Like, I think he's heavily leaning selling. And I do.
Yeah, I do too. I think that I think the comments that he's made a few times here recently, for the most part, it's funny too, because there was some reaction yesterday that he was walking it back.
Yeah.
And I heard Willie say he thought that he basically pushed further advancing that they're going to sell. I mean, hey, you know, however you want to interpret it, if you're him, you're not just going to broadcast to the world, I'm desperate, I'm selling no matter what, so right, give me some low prices, you know? And so you're not going to do that. I'm with you. I think that the fact that he's been willing – and one thing about David Poile – that I've always thought, which I appreciate, I don't know the players always appreciate, but David Poile has never been afraid to criticize a player. That's for sure.
No.
You know, I mean, he calls out, and that's not necessarily across the board, and I don't think that that's most GMs, but he'll put it on them, and he'll talk about people who aren't performing. I feel like there is a certain frankness with him in general. And so when, you know, he's trying to be careful at times, I think maybe in this situation, but the overall feeling from about every time he talks now is that he's leaning that way, I think.
Agreed. And I think what you also have to keep in mind this time of year especially is everything is a negotiation at the trade deadline. I mean, you're trying to, whether you're buying or selling, you're trying to secure the best deal possible for your team. And I don't know that a good strategy in trying to secure the best deal possible for your team is going to the media and being like, well, yep, we're wide open, baby. Everything must go. Like, we got to get these people out of here. Because, to your point, I mean, you know, you don't want to come across as desperate and you don't want to be lowballed with some of the prices that you're offered. And, look, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, too. The fact of the matter is the Predators don't have to do this. Like, you can – because they don't have a lot of unrestricted free agents, some of the same moves we're talking about now, if you decide to reset, like, you don't have to do it right now. You can do it in the offseason.
You may not be able to do it right now.
Yeah, you may not, like, depending on who we're talking about here. Now, you know, if that's the way things go and nothing really of consequence happens at the deadline, the fan base is going to freak out. I mean, I think we know that. I'm just saying, like, it's a different scenario because you don't have – all these unrestricted free agents left and right that you have to get something for. Like, there is a negotiation part of this to make sure that timing-wise you're trying to get the best deal that you can get if you're trying to sell off some of these pieces.
Yeah. So I wrote a column about the Preds, and that exact sentiment was like, you know, that may not work out. People may freak out. But you know what? Like, I can't find a Preds fan who doesn't want David Poile fired now anyway. So, you know, the freakout is already – aren't we already, like, in full freakout mode?
It'd like, be hard to imagine anger. It getting a whole lot worse.
Yeah, so – because that's the thing. If it does come down to that – and we've had this situation before where it's like, okay, this happened or didn't happen. It's like, but why? As long as the why is, hey, the deal wasn't good enough and there are better deals to be had and there's a lot to figure out in the offseason, fine. If it's because they win a couple more games against crap teams coming up here,
And it's like, oh, that's different. I don't know. But I mean, we'll never get the answer if they don't do anything. So probably better for everyone's state of mind if they do something.
Probably. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I still think, I mean, there are guys right now that they kind of screen deadline deals to me. Like, I think Nino, if you decided to sell, like, I think Nino Niederreiter is a deadline type of deal you can make. He's only got 1 year after this. He's got an affordable contract. He can be that. I think Ekholm could be a deadline type of guy. Doesn't have to be, but I think he could be. But, like, when you start to talk about how much they want to tear this thing down, if that's the route they decide to go, like, the conversation always gets back to Saros because that's the piece that we think they could get a pretty good return on right now. And to me, like, if you were going to deal him, I think it would make more sense to do it in the offseason because you have teams that are – they know what their cap situation is. They can plan for what their cap situation will be. And you can get a little bit more of a bidding war in the offseason than you can at the deadline right now with a goalie. So
yeah, it makes sense. Unless there's one team right now that's like, this is it.
Unless
right?
they're willing to give you the world.
Here you go. Now, right at this moment, that's what's interesting. I think a lot of fans react this way, which is like, are you kidding? What are you talking about? Now, right at this moment, if you said, you know, Saros to David Poile, what's his immediate reaction?
I don't think there's much of an appetite to trade him right now. I don't. Now, I also think, you know, Pierre LeBrun put this out there, and I believe it, and I think it's smart. Like, if they decide to sell, Pierre LeBrun basically said David Poile will be listed on everybody. Like, I think you have to. I think you have to list on everybody. That includes Saros. And if somebody comes to you with a deal that knocks your socks off, like, you got to do it. And, you know, I don't know if Lankin is your starter next year. Like, the one scenario that I think you have to keep in mind here is, like, Askarov has been good this year, and he leads all rookies and wins in the AHL, and he's an all-star, all these different things. That's fine. Like, he doesn't need to be the backup goalie next year. He needs to play.
Right.
Either he needs to be the starter next year, and you're completely tearing this thing down for the Predators, or he needs to be the starter in Milwaukee and play. But he needs games underneath his
belt. I don't think it'd be good next year for him to start up.
I don't think it would either. I'm just saying, like, the idea that you could trade Saros and then, like, Lankin is your starter and Askarov can play 20 games for you next year, like, it doesn't do any good. He needs to play.
Yeah, no, I agree. Now, I have another question about Saros and Askarov that I think is huge if we get to the offseason.
We'll get into that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Take your thoughts on the Preds as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvik, taking your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025. We were discussing UC Saros and kind of coupling that in as to what the deadline could look like for the Predators, and also if you decided to reset or rebuild or whatever term you want to use, how many of those moves could come this offseason as well. And you had a thought on the Saros Askarov part of this.
Well, it's a question. So Saros is 27. He's proven he's an elite goaltender, and also, you know, right now, if you were to acquire him, it's not like you're taking on some huge deal. Askarov is 20.
Yep.
He seems to have all the tools to be great. His performance in Milwaukee, I would say, is ahead of schedule and very encouraging, not perfect. So if you're a potential trade partner this summer, because obviously now there's no comparison. I mean, Saros now is like, let's go on a run. You're ready. Let's go. No one would think that of Askarov, right? But in the summer, you have more time with Askarov. Maybe you believe he could be better, although just because he has all those traits that you look for traditionally in a goaltender, the Saros, what Saros is, works out pretty well.
Yep.
Who gets a bigger return?
It's a great question. I think the answer would be Saros.
Because he's
for
proven?
No other reason than he's proven. Like, I think you could get a good return for Askarov, but there is the potential aspect there that I think does scare some people off. I think it would be Saros. Now, if Saros was, well, let me change the equation. Like, Saros 2 years from now, which is when his contract expires, it's a different story. He's 29 then, and he's about to be, you know, get into your 30s. Not that you still can't play well as a goalie in your 30s, but it's just different. Like, I think his age factors into it as well. Like, you theoretically should have 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 more years of Saros playing at his prime.
But you might have a dozen with a scar off.
You might, but you know, you at least know what Saros is at the NHL level. I think it would be Saros that gets the bigger return, but I think it's a great question to bring up, because I think if you, like, at some point, we've talked about this, a decision has to come. Like, I don't think you can keep both of them. I just think it would be asset mismanagement at that point. And what you don't want to have happen is for Saros to get this thing all the way down to becoming an unrestricted free agent, and then you lose him for nothing, and Askarov's your goalie. Now, you'd probably feel good about Askarov being your goalie after right, that, but you have to get something for one of these two.
You have to parlay this into to some change of direction, or just addition of assets that you badly need. You have to.
And it doesn't have to be now. Like I think you could, depending on what you want to do and the direction you want to go with your team, I think you could keep Saros around for another year, and you could trade him either next deadline or next offseason, and you'd still get a lot for him. Now, maybe you wouldn't get as much as you would this summer. I don't know. I mean, he's got 2 years left on his deal after this. So teams would like the – especially at that price he comes with, which is pretty good at $5 million. Teams would love that. So
yeah.
The maximum time, if you were going to trade him, I think the maximum time to be able to do that would be either now at the deadline, or probably more likely this summer in the offseason. But then, like, the timing doesn't, to me, really add up gap-wise. Like, I guess Lankanen would have to be your starter next year.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's accepting at least a bad year. You know?
Right. But I don't know that they're –
They need to. I mean, yeah. You know, look, I'm with you. We've talked about this a million times. The whole just blow it completely up and strip it down. I think there's more failure examples than success examples there.
Yeah.
If you happen to do it in the right year and you win the lottery, great. But I'm not for that. But if you can't have an appetite for some kind of step back, which then gives you a high pick next year, and if you do it right. If you have McDonough and or Ekholm on your team, maybe by the time you get to the last year of their deals, you have a good team again.
Right.
Like, if you can't accept some, like, if you're going to be like, nope, got to just try to make the playoffs every year, you're never going to get
anywhere.
Then
you're not resetting at that point.
Right.
Like, you've got to
reset. Go Lankanen and a bad backup.
Yeah. I mean, that may be what you have to do. Like,
and tell people, you know what? Let's come watch some young guys.
Well, and people will be clamoring for Askarov, and I mean, you can't do that. Like, he's got to play. That's got to be the way that this goes. When Askarov is ready to be your NHL starter, like, I don't think Askarov should ever be the backup for this team. I think he should go from playing however many games he needs to play in Milwaukee to, oh, yep, he's ready, put him as a starter.
Because Saros wouldn't be here.
Exactly.
Yeah, because obviously, hey, it's great when you can have a Pecorino, UC Saros situation and you transition. That's great.
Right.
But Saros wasn't the prospect, the asset that Askarov is right now.
He was not. Never. And there's a big age difference, too. Like, by the time that, you know, Saros was coming in and was establishing himself as a backup, Pekka's starting to get older. Like, Saros is going to be in his 20s by the time Askarov – he's still be in his 20s by the time Askarov's ready to go. It's just it's a different situation there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You're right.
I know what you're saying. But, I'm just saying, like, it's not really the – like, Saros is not the mentor handing it off to the mentee as Pekka was to him.
Right.
Like, Saros is going to play in this league for another 10, 12 years.
So, do you know who – I see a lot of this on the text line, and when he said it yesterday, I'm like, really? Nine players had career years? Who are those?
Well, I mean, let's think. So – Duchesne, Forsberg, Yossi, obviously.
Okay.
Granlund was good. Did Granlund have a career year?
I mean, he must be including him. He must be
Tanner.
Including Johansson.
Janot, Trenin.
Okay.
Carrier.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just saying. Like, we're it really. I think it loosely depends on what your definition
players.
Of
I mean, that's the thing. Technically, it wasn't a career year for Johansson either. I mean, but
Philip Tomasino had a career year, best year of his career to this point.
All the rookies had career years. That's a good point. Everybody who was a rookie last year technically had a career year. I think he undershot on nine.
I'm just throwing it out there.
All right. That clears it up a little bit.
I got a text that says, that was the worst take on older goalies getting worse. Hasek, Belfour, Brodeur. I'm not saying that they're getting worse. I'm saying the trade value isn't as high.
Right. And
when you get older.
And you have those examples, but if you look at
all those guys eventually got worse.
They did. And if you look at the overall numbers on goalie, like,
otherwise they'd have kept playing.
Yeah. I mean, it's not quarterbacks. I mean, a lot of goalies. I will say, though, I remember there was a piece someone wrote in Pecorino going into the 16-17 season. I think Pecorino was ranked by somebody like 29th goalie in the league that year. And it was like, you know, this is about when you fall off the cliff. And then, of course, we know what happened that year. But, yeah, goalies, once you get into the 33-34 range, not a lot of them are able to maintain like the same level of play from like 28-29.
James on the text line says, you must ice a solid defense in front of Askarov from day one. Don't throw him to the Wolves. I got another text that says, guys, what are we talking about here? You have a starting NHL goalie in his prime, and you think a young guy that's not even playing in the NHL would bring the same return? You need to trade Saros for a truckload of picks and call it done. That's from a texter on the text
I'm
line.
Sorry, man. A 20-year-old with his traits, when you consider this could be like our guy for a decade, and look how talented he is, and look what he's already doing in the AHL in a year. I questioned this year, like, is he ready for that? Oh, yeah.
He's ready.
He's good. I mean, I know what you're saying. Like, and you're probably right, Robbie. Like, the fact that you're proven in this league gives him the edge, but I don't think this is some huge you think about the time difference, man. And again, Askarov is just like the classic. He just has all of the tools.
He does.
So, I don't know, man. I think you may find a team, and that's all it takes, that's like, yeah, like this, we have nothing going, and right here, we're set now.
Well, there's been a situation that's similar to this one, and Willie brought this up last week, and I think it's a good comparison. Like, the Lightning went through something pretty similar with this. Now, Bishop, they had Ben Bishop as their goalie, and he took him to the Stanley Cup final in 2015, and he was a really good goalie. Now, he also, as his career went on, had some injury problems that just became too much. Like, he ended up being the goalie in Dallas, and, you know, injuries galore. But my point is, like, Ben Bishop was a pretty good goalie, and he got Tampa to the Stanley Cup final, and there came a time where they had to make a decision, and they said, you know what? We're going with our young guy, who turned out to be Andre Vasilevsky, who's pretty darn good.
He's okay.
So, you know, Vasilevsky was a high, high, high level goaltending prospect. He was probably even a little bit higher than Askarov is right now. So,
but imagine Askarov being close to him for a decade in this league. You telling me teams out there wouldn't be attracted to that? Now, are you telling me the Preds shouldn't want that too?
Right.
Yeah, I'm just saying, don't discount that value.
But I've thought about this and discussed it. Like, I do think just natural ability wise, size wise, just the whole picture, I think Askarov's upside is better than Saros. But I also, like, I look at Saros' numbers and I'm like, well, how much better is he really going to get?
Yeah, just because he does it unconventionally doesn't mean it's not getting done.
Exactly. So it's a really interesting spot that they're in on that front. And you're talking about a position where, like, you start to look around, like, forward wise, right now the Predators don't have a ton of tradable assets that they're going to want to get rid of. Defensemen, they do, with a couple of guys that are older. There's not much coming up in the pipeline. Like, I got two goalies right now that are pretty good assets. So,
you have to parlay it, man. You have to.
615-737-1025. We've got more of your thoughts on the Predators to get into. We'll get to that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.